Hello and welcome to The Tips, a betting preview podcast from the DP World Tour. I'm your host, Ollie Silverton, and as usual, I'm joined by our expert guests as we look ahead to the Horizon Irish Open from the iconic K Club in County Kildare, and also we talk about the Ryder Cup. Before we start, it is important to note that this podcast is aimed at listeners aged 18 and over. All odds were accurate at the time of recording, and the betting information is aimed at a UK audience only. Please remember to gamble responsibly, and for more information, visit begambleaware.org. Yes, time to meet those expert guests I mentioned. And we've got a couple of crackers. I think it might be the first time together on this podcast. But it's Tom Jacobs, the host of the Lost for Words podcast, and Niall Lyons from Odds Checker. Welcome, gentlemen. We're going to talk about Cron shortly and how you went last week, but we've got to go, you know, straight into Ryder Cup stuff. I mean, it ties up quite nicely because a certain Ludvig Åberg got the job done, Niall. How did you enjoy the tournament? It's always a special one on television. And what do you think it did for, in terms of Ryder Cup selecting it? Did it sort of make Luke's Captain Luke's job a bit easier?
It definitely did make it easier, didn't it? I think he was going to make it regardless. Yeah, as long as he performed reasonably well across the week, which he did, and he finished obviously with a wet seal to come and beat the likes of Bjork and Fitzpatrick, who were slightly disappointed in defeat round the back down there. But yeah, it was just, he steamrolled them, and it was just so impressive. I think coming off the PGA Tour, obviously we've talked about this in European Tour events, and I do in my previews an awful lot. Guys coming off the PGA Tour and winning on the DP World Tour, we can see it. There's been numerous occasions this year where it's happened, and Åberg was another one. Maybe slightly overlooked by even tipsters like us, because it's not the kind of event where you would usually go and back the Bombers. You know what I mean? It's one of those guys. It's one of those places where you back the Placers, and Åberg was just fantastic, and it's going to be fascinating. To see how he goes in the Ryder Cup. It's going to be fascinating to see who he's paired with. Yeah, as you said, certainly made Donald's job easier. Not that I think it was going to be a different decision. And for what it's worth, I think he's made the right decision on the six that he's picked. It's fascinating to talk about, and I'm sure we'll go into it. Larry maybe slightly lucky given his form, who knows. But yeah, we're near less than a month away. And I think the betting's going towards Europe. You know, I was singing from the rooftops that around 7-4 that this was definitely value, and now they're heading towards 5-4. And now I'm beginning to think, is there going to be a time where the Americans are going to be a bet if they reach even money or better? It's, you know, it's an interesting affair with only a few weeks to go.
It absolutely is. It was fascinating viewing. He got it done ahead of Alex Fitzpatrick and Alex Bjork, who Tom Jacobs won't be best pleased with if they got right up. But Tom, when Niall says he thinks he's got the six right, you had a little look to the skies there. And obviously a name that a lot of people are talking about is Mr. Moronk, who seems like the unlucky 13th man, and there always seems to be one. Are you happy with the six picks, or would you have gone a different route?
Yeah, like I think I'd have taken Moronk, but the trouble is, like, and the clear issue that the captain's had is that, like, who do you leave out, right? So I think that a lot of talk was, can you leave Sepp Straka out? Like, he's not really played a lot of European golf, you know, not potentially the best course fit. But when you listened to Luke Donald yesterday, he was very much like, Sepp Straka is one of the best drivers of the golf ball. He's been really important. And when you look at it, like, he's basically gained strokes in almost every event in 2023 in terms of off the tee. And it's a nice blend of accuracy and distance. So I do think he'll be a good partner in that respect. So you've got that. And look, I can see, I like Niall, I thought that Shane Lowry was a little bit fortunate. But, you know, I don't know how you leave him out. Like, I think there'll be a lot of answering to do if you left him out. Whereas I think if you leave a Højgaard or a Moronk out, I think it basically came down to those two. Åberg was, you know, he did what he needed to do in front of Luke Donald, I think, way back at the Rocket Mortgage Luke mentioned. And then, you know, he was asked to play for 2 weeks and played it, and, you know, he did win. So my only knock on Åberg so far has been the fact that he's only been able to put three of the four rounds together. And last week he grew into the event and took it. So, really nothing to argue on the Åberg front. I think that Adrian Moronk is desperately unlucky. I don't know what you say to someone who's won three times in the last year, won on the golf course and finished second, what else they could have done. The mathematical answer is to have stayed on the DP World Tour and not ventured over to the PGA for a couple of events. But I actually think, and this, like, I don't know, there's a lot of Robert McIntyre fans, but like, I think him hanging on to that points position whilst not playing very well was a headache. I know a lot of people will say that he'd have got picked if he missed, but if Moronka got the automatic spot and McIntyre missed out, I don't think you're taking him over Åberg and Højgaard. I think Højgaard seemed pretty cemented in based on what Luke Donald was saying and Thomas Bjorn being on the vice captaincy. So, yeah, overall, look, it's a tough job. Someone always has to miss out. And I think the best part of all of this, Ollie and Niall, is that probably 6 months ago, I was wondering who could possibly step up and take an 11th and 12th spot. And now it's who are we leaving out? So it's a really positive conversation to have.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the McIntyre sort of predicament is an interesting one on the back of just a great Scotland performance there. But he does get up and about. It's almost like the US side with Brooks Koepka. They were hand with force by getting knocked out. And we obviously recorded just before those picks dropped last week, Niall. But we pretty much got the nail on the head with Sam Burns essentially being the biggest or bigger talking point. What do you make of their sides and the picks from Zach Johnson?
Yeah, the Burns selection surprised me. It really did. I think Keegan Bradley had done enough to get in the side. And obviously, from what he posted on social media, he was really gutted about it. And I think he's got every right to. You know, whilst Europe, you're pretty convinced now that I think they've got the best 12 players that they could. I don't know. The jury's out with the States. I was surprised with Burns. I don't know whether, you know, the Scottie Scheffler influence really was a decision maker in that there. And if it is, it's all going to be in the captain. And if he, it looks, I would say they probably will pair them together. If it doesn't go right, then it's going to be on Zach Johnson's head. I think the team is slightly weaker for Brian Harman's inclusion. Just looking at Marco Simone, you think it wouldn't fit. But then, you know, just a couple of weeks ago at Olympia Fields, he was fifth, and you wouldn't have thought that was a course that would suit Brian Harman either. He's actually did quite well. Obviously, the big talking point is Justin Thomas. And I don't think Justin Thomas took Keegan Bradley's place. I do think it was Sam Burns. But I was just looking last night. It was actually quite interesting. I think Thomas, you know, obviously these Ryder Cup games don't go 18 holes. Obviously, the majority of them don't. You know, Thomas, there's only 20 Americans above Thomas on tour this season in the birdie or better percentage. And the majority of those you wouldn't have even considered for the Ryder Cup. So you look at that, he ranks 32nd, birdie or better. Burns ranked 55th. Spieth ranked 77th. I think there's every... Looking at results, you know, Thomas is in poor form for a guy of his quality. But even just looking at those birdie percentages, he's going to add a lot to the team and he's going to win a lot of holes, I would say, unless he turns up with obviously a horrific game. But those two guys, Larry on Europe and Thomas on America, they're the two guys who are not in form. And if either of them don't perform in the week, I think it's going to be on the captain's head.
Yeah, there's a lot of faith being shown, but that's absolutely right. And Thomas has had, sure, he hasn't his best year, but there have been some mad blowout holes, basically, haven't there? Eights and nines, which essentially don't really matter in match play. Yeah. You just go one down. And he is such a competitive person that it's very tough to leave him out, especially when you've got the friendship angle as well. Just finally on the Ryder Cup, Tom, we've heard Niall's sort of price line. How are you feeling about, now you've seen it all, it's all done, how are you feeling about Team Europe's prospects?
Yeah, look, I think at the moment people are rightly getting excited about the fact that we're underdogs again, especially at home. And you know, you'll always hear the record of how long it's been since we got beaten on European soil, right? I'm desperate for the USA price to come to evens or better. I actually think their team is easier to pair up. So Niall just pointed out there that Sam Burns is probably only included because he's a very good fit for Scottie Scheffler, who's obviously the best player in the world, and you want to make him feel comfortable. Then you've got Spieth and Thomas is made for Schauffele and Cantlay. That I think that's where Keegan Bradley would have lost out, is the fact that he's not an obvious pairing for anyone, right? You've got Max Homer and Colin Morikawa, I think, will play together as well. So you've got these really obvious pairings and the history of winning recently, winning so well. I know it was on home soil, but I can't get over this thing that Marco Simone isn't any really more suited to Europe than the US team, right? Like, I think a lot of people always say, they think of Le Golf National and how well that's set up for us and Belfries in the past and all those sort of things. But like, this is a big driver's golf course that will suit all those guys as well. And we talk about kind of like Thomas is the most egregious pick. Well, he's unbelievable in the Ryder Cup and President's Cup in terms of just individual points and things like that. So I think that leaving him out was a lot harder to do. Especially when he fits so well with Spieth. So overall, I think we deserve to be talked about Europe in the way that we have been. And all the time we're underdogs, I think that, you know, that should be the bet. But if it gets any closer and it starts becoming pick 'em, I think you have to look at the US and just how strong they are.
Absolutely right. I mean, on paper, they are a very strong side. But the major wins have made it a very interesting conversation. It's very exciting. And I mean, the video's already coming out of the length of rough of Marco Simone. And I saw people on Twitter dispelling the accuracy of the tee, where actually I think it's 0.1% or something more accurate, America. So it's going to be fascinating. Course form could be very important. Obviously, Team Europe have a bit more experience there, but we could talk about it for days. We've got a bit more on pairings later in the mailbag, which we'll get to. But now it's time to dive into this week's event, which is, of course, the Horizon Irish Open. Yes, we're in County Kildare at the K Club this week for the Horizon Irish Open. Of course, designed by the one and only Arnold Palmer. It had the Ryder Cup in 2006 and it's had 11 European Opens hosted there. The last time the Irish Open was hosted at the K Club, Rory McIlroy hit one of the best shots of his career, which was a 5-wood on the very last hole from 253 yards that he stiffed right to 2 feet to seal victory. We haven't seen loads of the course since then, Niall, but what can you tell us about it and what are the memories you have from events here?
I've actually plenty of memories. This is one event where I used to go to as a kid growing up, the European Open. Absolutely loved it. It's actually there a year, I think Matthias Gronberg won. I think he won by an absolute mile, as far as I remember. Interesting story as well. I think that it was that tournament where there was a thunderstorm towards the end, and very rarely that play is stopped by lightning in Dublin, but it was. And everybody found themselves walking up the 18th fairway. There was only a couple of holes left, and I walked it up with Gary Nicklaus, who was playing in the event, Jackson, having a chat about chat to him about the golf, which was a good memory to have. But yeah, K Club's absolutely brilliant, and it's a tough driving course, it really is, and the rough will be thick as well as Belusha. It's the same, anybody who's not in the UK or Ireland, it has been an absolutely abysmal summer. Ollie, you'll be glad to hear that. So the rough will be lush. It'll be it's not the longest of golf courses, but you will need to keep the ball in play. It's more of a strategic golf course for sure. Reminds me a little bit of the Brabazon course at the Belfry. And I actually don't think you need to look far for correlating courses. There's been two events in the last number of weeks, which Brabazon, which held the British Masters, and Cron last week. I think it's kind of similar games needed for all. Obviously, Ludvig Åberg, you know, bombed his way to victory around Cron, but that's not usually the MO around there. So, I think that those two results, I reckon, will throw up some interesting outsiders. And I would be surprised if those leaderboards don't look somewhat similar come the end of the week.
Okay, interesting. You mentioned there about the shocking weather. And Tom, when I was looking at this, I was thinking this might be a bit hard from sort of your expert tips, right? Because we've moved from often that June, July time to September. We had it in COVID as well, but weather is different then. And also, you look at the list of courses, they're amazing, but very hard to get consistency. There's back-to-back Mount Juliet's, but then you've got Galgorm, Lahinch, Ballyliffin, Port Stewart, County Down, Portrush. I mean, it's an unbelievable list. How did you go about working out when you don't know as much of the course? You know, every, some events we see year in, year out, you know what people like, you know certain holes. What's your approach when putting your previews together this week?
So Niall mentioned Cron there, and you, look, you wouldn't necessarily think of an Irish golf course being the same as one in the Swiss mountains, right? But the things are there. Bradley Dredge was second here in 2016. He'd won at Crans. Graham Storm's been second at both. Konstantin Rocker had won at Crans, was second here. Matthias Grunberg won at both. Per Jurit Johansson had won twice here and fourth at Crans. And then you've got Jimenez and Bjorn that had won at Crans multiple times and contended here. And I think Lee Westwood won at both. So obviously a lot of kind of names there that are just stalwarts on the DP World Tour, and they would win anywhere, I think. But I think the idea is that the game is similar. So it might not be that the course is similar, but you need to be good with your approaches, and that will generally be, you know, help you everywhere. But the last three winners on this golf course have led the field in greens regulation, even going back to Rory in 2016. So I took that. I took basically form in the Irish Open in general. Like, I think if it's a true links course versus an inland links, that's slightly different. But generally speaking, Irish Open form has been quite consistent for players over the years, and that's certainly what I've gone with. So, yeah, just that Irish Open form, a little bit of Crons form. I think the fact that it's going back-to-back is great. And just guys that are hitting their irons and wedges well, because I think the approach play, you know, Niall's talked about how tough it could be driving. And I think that is definitely true. But I've just focused on the approaches and how much they can, you know, find themselves in the green and how regularly.
The other really exciting thing about this event, I think, is the field. I mean, you're looking at the market end. Rory McIlroy at the top, fair enough, at 4-1. Then you've got Tyrrell Hatton, 10-1. Shane Lowry, 16-1 with home crowd behind him. Minwoo Lee, Adam Scott, a couple of Aussies at 18s. Adrian Meronk, 25s. It's a stellar field. Niall, do you think that some of the pressures and stress and the unknowing around the Ryder Cup, that's now gone. Do you think that will help some players, or do you think it's also just going to be in the back of their mind still that they're really trying to find form and that is almost more at the forefront than getting maybe the job done this week?
Yeah, I think, you know, specifically for the likes of Meronk and obviously the Højgaards don't turn up, but Shane Lowry and Yannick Paul, and I think it's been a tough few weeks and they could feel some ill effects of that. It'll be interesting to see whether Meronk is galvanized, you know, by not being included in the Ryder Cup team. But in general, those guys, I think, could be a little bit burnt out. And that's why I was kind of keen to avoid them in the betting. It'll be interesting, obviously, to see how Rory McIlroy goes, whether he's overcome, you know, the back injury or not. He obviously did look in some fair discomfort at the Tour Championship, but nevertheless, you know, he equipped himself very well, and I've finished with a good round of 65 on the Sunday as well. So, yeah, obviously the best names in the world are here. Even Billy Horschel's an interesting player this week, obviously, and next week at Wentworth too. He has a good record when he comes over to the DP World Tour, so he certainly could be in the mix. But yeah, it's one of the best events for me of the year, and having these two events, the Irish Open and the BMW PGA next week, back-to-back's exciting.
It's really exciting. And as you say, if Adrian Meronk wins it again, I can't imagine what Luke Donald will be thinking. Adrian Meronk maybe hoping there's, you know, some way, something that happens for him. But let's get into those picks, because you said you've avoided a few of them. But Tom Jacobs, you may not have. Who are you opening up with your first outright?
Yeah, so I'm going with Adrian Meronk. And I think, like, part of what Niall said there was, you know, he could be burnt out. I've gone with the other approach, that he's going to be freed up, in the sense that, one, he's not trying to hang on to that or trying, you know, leapfrog Robert McIntyre for that European points spot. I think he was probably told 2 or 3 weeks ago that, barring any real surprise, he was going to be in. And then Åberg was the surprise. So that's potentially what's happened to him. He seemed a little bit upset that he wasn't on the team, rightly so. So I think that, you know, these things go one or two ways. They either crumble and they're really disappointed. You look at it and think, well, he hasn't got that much to play for now until the DP World Tour finals and things like that. But I look at it in the way that this is the first time he's got a chance to defend a title. This is the first, you know, tournament he won a year ago. And the fact that he's just been so good in the Irish Open, he was 10th in his debut, missed cut the second time around, but then won last year. And I just think that everything about him, like I tried to... The first thing that came to my mind was he wants to prove Luke Donald and Europe wrong and come out and win straight away. But then I had to kind of remove that, which I think you have to when you're betting and tipping, right? Because that shouldn't be a factor. We can't second guess what his mentality is going to be, right? So I took it out. And just looking at the basic numbers, like he was top seven in greens in regulation in three of his four rounds last week. He was 15th in approach. He had a very good one round. It was on Friday where he really looked like he was going to give the field a problem. And look, I just think that with the Rorys, the Hattons, the Lowrys in the field, you always get a little bit of better value on some of these players at the top of the market. And Adrian Ronk is the beneficiary of that, I think, at 25s. And look, I think that the one concern with Moronk and what people have pointed to, and he's been included, is how he's not stepped up in these bigger fields. And the one time he missed the cut of Marco Simone either side of his first or in the middle of his first and second was when Rory and Fitzpatrick and that were playing in it. So there is a concern that when the big boys are here, he might struggle. But I don't necessarily buy into that. I think it's a small sample size. He's a winner now three times. And I think he has got the opportunity to really go and prove himself. And look, it won't mean a lot 1 week too late, but it does mean a lot for his DP World Tour prospects and warming up for the PGA Tour next season, which he'll be playing on.
Yeah, certainly, like, of all those Ryder Cup hopefuls and the ones that I was keen to avoid, it was definitely Moronk who was most interesting because he can be galvanised. He's the one who could react to this and, you know, really make Luke Donald look a bit silly, even though we think they've got the best 12 at the minute. But, yeah, it'll be certainly interesting if he goes on to win. I was keen to get, as I said, couple of guys coming off the PGA Tour. I was keen to get a couple on mistaken plan. Obviously, a few weeks ago, we saw Daniel Brown win coming off a seventh place at the Barbasol. Obviously, Ludwig Eiberg is the latest to come off the PGA Tour and win. So I was kind of looking at those guys towards the top of the market. I think Minwoo Lee will be better suited by a different venue. It's not the kind of venue where, you know, you need excessive distance off the tee. Shane Lowry is obviously out of form, and I think he's been under pressure lately, and he could be tired too, and you know there's a lot of pressure even on the Irishmen, you know, in their home open too. So, so my eyes turned to Tyrrell Hatton and Adam Scott, and I just think Adam Scott at double the price of Tyrrell is slightly more interesting. He had a difficult start to the year, but he definitely found form in the last 68 weeks. He didn't make the final 70 in the FedEx, unfortunately, but it was close. He did give a good account of himself at the Wyndham. He was 7th-3rd, just narrowly missed out by two spots, making the next tournament. Previous to that, he was 5th at Quail Hollow, 8th at Craig Ranch, and then 9th at the Memorial. So, yeah, he's got four top 10s in his last 9. And then I was looking at the quality of winners here at the K-Club down the years. It includes Bernard Langer, Masters champion, Darren Clark, an Open champion, Michael Campbell, US Open champion. You've got Padraig Harrington, a double major or a triple major champion, who's gone close here. Alathabal and Retief Goosen are more double major winners who have gone very close here as well. So I think it brings out the best in the game, and I think Adam Scott's name would look pretty among them. So a couple of points each way for me at 22-1.
I think with Adam Scott, no, like it's a really high quality player rounding back into form with very little distraction. He's not had the Ryder Cup to worry about. He's not had even the FedEx Cup playoffs to worry about. He's missed those. So he's had a patch of like time to decompress, I guess, from a long PGA Tour season. And really, he's choosing to play his events for reasons only known to himself. Like he wants to play them, probably get onto that kind of DP World Tour Championship event. And he's got back-to-back weeks. I'm assuming he's probably playing at Wentworth next week as well. So he's got two high-quality events where he can prove the form that he's in and prove the player that he still is. And look, we've seen ever since he went back to the longer putter, he's been a force again, especially in that department. So, yeah, I think he's ran off really nicely and could come here. I was surprised he actually hasn't played in more of these. I thought this would be kind of right up his street around the kind of, but I guess it's just maybe where it was in the schedule before didn't really fit with him. So definitely a good move for the Irish Open that's later on in the year.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone's turning down a trip, are they, to over to the K Club. So I can see why they have a good time in Ireland either way, Scotty. But they are the opening outright picks. Who have we got following that up then from you, Tom Jacobs?
Yeah, so for me, I'm going with Joost Luiten. And I think that we, you know, might have a good discussion here on him. It's one of those where he feels very similar to Alexander Bjork in the fact that he's been charged by really good approach play and also had a season, I think he's 7 top 10s now after his 5th last week, very similar to Bjork, in the sense that I think they both will feel hard done by. Not hard done by, because it's on them to kind of win, right? But like, they'll feel they've not quite achieved what they should have done if they don't turn one of these into a win. And that alone is not enough to say that Joost Luiten's suddenly going to beat Shane Lowry and Rory McIlroy and people like that. But no, he was 5th last week. There is a slight concern that the only thing that's really breaking up his form at the moment is how he's played in the Open, the Scottish Open, which was... But he still made cuts. He still did it, right? And it's been 2nd, 9th and 11th in the Irish Open in the past. And I think that's really important. He did miss the cut in 2016 here, but he leads his field in approach over the last 15 weeks just from a raw numbers point of view. He ranks inside the top 3 on 4 occasions in 7 starts in that department as well, especially 3rd last week. This is just a veteran who I think knows how to win golf tournaments. It's not been the case this year. He's looked a little bit sheepish in contention, but it's been a while now. And I just think with Loughton, the approach play is so good. The driving can be good. His chipping is what's letting him down. And I don't know how much of that he's going to need to do if he's on form. So I like Joost Luiten to really come back with a vengeance again this week.
Yeah, he's on my list too, Tom. A point each way around the 60-1 mark. As you say, really impressive last week. 2 66s, a 65 and a 68. Interesting that the two courses that I've mentioned in the last month or two, the Brabazon and Crown, he's been 8th and 5th.
Yeah.
And he led the BMW International Open after 3 rounds as well, and the British Masters at the Belfry. So he's had 2 poor final rounds there, but nevertheless, the lead 2 events on the European Tour in the last 68 weeks after 54 holes is quite impressive. Obviously, Tom mentioned earlier on that greens and regulation at this course, the last 3 winners have topped that stat. Juice Sarns have been great lately, and he ranks 12th on tour this season in greens and regulation. He was 22nd on the greens last week as well, and if anything that's a slight worry, it would be his putter. But that showed improvement last week, and if he can carry that on, he's going to be a big player here.
Interestingly, now you said about the 54-hole leads. He's given up 2 of those recently, shooting a 74, and I think when he had the 54-hole lead at the Irish Open before, he shot a 74. So hopefully we're not talking about 54-hole lead where he shoots 74 this week. But it is interesting. No, and I'm interested to kind of get your view on this. I view Luiten as kind of a bit of a closer. You look at what he was like in his past, you know, 6-7 wins on the DP World Tour, and they come in bunches. I think it's only recently, after kind of injury and you know, COVID breaks and things like that, that he's really struggled. And I think, you know, it does take some time to get back in. He's had 2 recent reps of that now, as you pointed to. So I think he's in a good position to do it before the season's out.
Yeah, absolutely. He had 3, between 2017 and 2022, he had 3 top 5 finishes. Now he's got 4 this year. You know what I mean? So he's certainly trending in that direction. My next bet, slightly smaller odds than that, there's Aaron Rye. I think these next 2 weeks for Aaron are a big opportunity. The K Club and Wentworth are 2 courses that will really suit him. The last time he played a full DP World Tour event on the tour, it was the Italian Open last September, Marco Simoni, where he finished 5th. And that was behind the likes of McIlroy and Fitzpatrick. And I think when he comes back to the DP World Tour, you're going to need to keep a very close eye on him. He's making a really good living now out in the States. He made the top 70, didn't quite make the top 50 for the BMW, the playoffs. But his last win obviously came on the DP World Tour in Scotland. And his other win, of course, on the DP World Tour as well, was in Hong Kong, another tough driving course, one that you need to keep the ball in play as well. So, yeah, accuracy off the tee and solid approach play is the name of the game across the K Club and the Wentworth. So, yeah, I'm quite excited about Rye's chances over the next 2 weeks.
Great. Okay, Aaron Rye there is the second one. And Joost Luiten looking for his first win in over 5 years, which is a bit staggering. But as you say, he does go in patches. And if it's not a bomber's course, yeah, that's one of the names you often think of, sort of consistently hitting greens in reg. He's a machine for it. And you both agree on him. Obviously, you get a few more special picks. We fill out that team if it's your betting card or your fancy card. So, and some tasty odds I've seen here. So, Tom Jacobs, who's finishing off your lineup this week?
Yeah, so for me, there's a couple. I'll go with the one that I really liked first. So for me, it was Eddie Pepperell. He's just been great with his irons. Like, and that's, you know, not even kind of hyperbolic. He's been fantastic. And he's ranked 8th, 4th and 5th his last three starts in strokes gained approach. He had a couple of weeks where he was 1st and 3rd before that as well. And I talked about Irish Open form. He loves it. He finished 8th here in 2016. He was 2nd, 8th and 4th in the Irish Open in total. And 8th, 3rd and 39th for his last 3 weeks is fine. Interestingly, his 8th at Cron's really caught my eye because he's never really played that well there, despite the fact it should fit. So I think he's just playing so well at this point that he's overcoming poor course form at different events. The fact he's now come back to one where he did play well in 2016 and an event that he truly does love, I think now's the time for Eddie Pepperell to stand up and get himself into true contention again. I think it last time was Sean Crocker, right, beat him at the Hero. And I think that was the last time we kind of saw Eddie Pepperell really in contention. And I think this time he's got a great chance. Look, the field is stacked. And do you want Eddie Pepperell to go down the back nine with Tyrrell Hatton and Rory McIlroy? Potentially not. But, you know, if you said that about any of these players, then you're slowly going to rule them out. So I think we take the boosted value. I think he's about 70 to 1 now, Eddie Pepperell. Happy to go a point each way on him to come and really impress the Irish Open.
Great. Eddie Pepperell does love Ireland. I remember his 14 club challenge a few years back, Ryan Fox. It's one of the best ball striking performances I've seen. He can certainly create some wild shots if the weather does pick up. Okay, well, you've got a couple more, Tom, we'll get to in a second. But Niall, who are you throwing in is a bit of a longer shot?
Yeah, I've got a couple. Marcus Helichild is my first one. I think his game's turned a corner in recent weeks. He was second on approach at the Gallaghorn and 13th on approach last week in Crom. The driver is a concern, and he'll definitely need to drive the ball better if he wants to win around the Clay Club. He didn't drive the ball well last week, despite a decent effort. But yeah, I do think his game's definitely turned a corner, and he's going to be a danger here. And you know, the Danish have a great record here in the Irish Open as well. The one thing that stood out for me the reason why I wanted to back him is because he had a first round of 71 last week in Crom. And over the next three rounds, he beat Ludvig Åberg by one shot. He beat Alexander Bjork, the runner-up, by two shots. And he beat the third place, Matt Fitzpatrick, by five shots. So over the final three rounds, to have that there kind of form, coupled with the way he hit his irons at the Gallaghorn, I thought any triple-figure prices about him was really interesting.
Perfect. I mean, Danish golf at the moment is extraordinary. I saw a tweet the other day, I think it was from Mark Gledsom, saying, Højgaard, Helikildi, Axelsen, Bring, Beregaard, Hondebol, Muller, Fredriksen. It is everywhere you look, you seem to get the Danish flag, and they've got good representation here. And I think a couple more get some shout-outs from you, Tom Jacobs, this week.
Yeah, so definitely one on the shorter odds, more in Pepperell's range, is Thorbjørn Olesen, who I know Niall's, you know, put up a couple of times, and I thought he might have come with him again this week. He's had 9 Irish Open appearances, and he's finished in the top 18 in 6 of them. 3 of those were top 10s, including a top 10 here in 2016. And I think he's just playing a little bit better than he's been given credit for. Obviously, he's not finishing it off, but 3 top 25s in his last 6 starts, 3rd halfway mark at the British Masters, and Niall's already pointed to what he thinks about that golf course as a potential correlation, and 25th in the Scottish Open, which is a strong event, 11th for the Czech Masters, 10th going into the final round there. And whilst he could only finish 40th last week, his strokes gained approach numbers were fine, and he actually led the field in just pure greens and regulation. He was great, and he averaged over 84% of the greens. So if there's a question mark about how some of these can kind of perform in contention, I think Olesen's one that I feel pretty solid about. And he was one of the later additions to my card, but just that kind of Irish Open form, how well he's played here, I think that translates to, you know, form in any of these courses. And it's great that he's got the top 10 here as well. So Thorbjørn Olesen for me, about 66 to 1, I think is good value and one that's benefited from the stronger top of the market.
I think he's one who has a huge ceiling as well. I don't think he's you know, achieved anywhere near what he's capable of. And I think there is going to be a period in his career where, you know, he just catches fire. And yeah, Ireland's one of those places where you could. My final selection is Julian Guerrier. Another playing very well. He's got three top finishes. He's got three top three finishes in his last nine starts. One of them was at the Barracuda, obviously in the States, where he shot a 61 in the final round there. His other two top three finishes came at Green Eagle and Margo Simone over the last couple of months. Now, there are golf courses, obviously, that are synonymous with long driving and you know, straight driving as well. K Club's obviously slightly different, but Guerrier's long game's in really good nick. And that's what you need around the K Club. Top 25 in Prague as well, the caveat of bad poor putting week. I think he's going really well. And I was surprised about the 125 to 1, 150 to 1 prices out there, especially because he won the Irish Challenge here in 2017, not at the K Club, but just literally 30 minutes down the road at Mount Wolseley. So I think coming back to this area is with the golf that he's playing, he's certainly worth the risk around those prices.
Okay, Julian Guerrier, which just leaves one more from you, I believe, Tom Jacobs. That's some serious odds. A bit of scrolling to find this one on Odds Checker.
Yeah, Søren Kjeldsen is now 400 to 1. I think he was 500 to 1 when I wrote this in yesterday. But I actually think he's playing better than people give him credit for. And look, this is Søren Kjeldsen. He's, I think, nearing 50. He hasn't won since he won the Irish Open back in, I think it was 2015 was the last time he won. But weekend rounds of 65, two weekend rounds of 65 in Kranz, the Open of a 66 as well, playing some seriously nice golf last week. Didn't play well at the Czech Masters, but you wouldn't expect him to on a driver-heavy golf course, right? That's absolutely fine that he made the cut there. He was 24th at Maiden Himland, obviously playing in his home event, but he opened with a 73 and then finished 67, 66, 67, which is great. Don't really care about the missed cut at the Barbasol. At the British Masters, he opened with a 69 to sit inside the top 10 after round one and just blew up in round two with a 77, which I think a lot of people did at that golf course. It's that type of event. And then you go back to the Scandinavian Mix and he was fifth. So this is a player that has been exceptional, really, for his age, for his current ability, I think is fair to say. And I wanted someone that's got a little bit of experience on the course, and short of Podrick Harrington, who's got two runner-up finishes here, Kjeldsen's right up there in terms of one of the best. And he's actually, if you extend out to the last 15 weeks and just raw data, he's fourth in strokes gained approach, and that's not accounting for his kind of missed cuts as well in that time at the Barbasol. So the way he's hitting the ball, the fact he's got, you know, Irish Open winning form in 2015, the fact that he has got two top 20s at this golf course, 16th and 19th. I just think that Kjeldsen can steal an eighth place finish or a seventh place finish, which should obviously give us some each way return. So whilst, you know, very hesitant to come on here and say that Søren Kjeldsen come out and win in 2023, I do think that you can kind of get 100 to 1 each way money on him actually contending and getting into places.
Perfect. There you go. And some, as you said, some sneaky good form that may have been snuck under the radar somewhat. And again, if it's not a bomber's course and you need to be hitting greens, there's not many better than Søren. So nine names for you there in total, which we, of course, will recap later. But first, it's time for everyone's favourite. It's a game of Who Am I? Yes, that's right. It is Who Am I? Where I pick a player I think is going to go well that you guys haven't mentioned so far and give some random, pretty random stats, figures, life anecdotes about them and see if you guys can get it. So as ever, don't have to put in an answer after each one. But if you fancy it, go for it. I'll start with my classic, the generic-y one. Number one is I have earned just under 5 million euros in career earnings. Throwing any guesses. Tom's sitting on it. He wants the one and done. It's a real mic drop moment, as is now. Okay, we're going to the second. I was the captain of the Minnesota golf team. Collegiate. Minnesota. I know.
I'll go for Guido.
It's not Guido.
Tom. Eric Van Rooyen.
Oh my word. Eric Van Rooyen is the correct answer. That is
superb, Tom.
That is, yeah, you can't compete with that. I mean, I'll give you the others. I've won on both the DP World Tour and PGA Tour next. In my pastime, I love playing the guitar and surfing. And in 2018, I was the Challenge Tour Graduate of the Year. But all you needed was Minnesota. How did you know that?
I don't think I'd have got it on any of the other clues. Like, if I didn't get it this time. I think what it was, is it the 3M Open at Minnesota? And he always gets touted there as this guy that's going to contend because he's got the Minnesota background and Eric Van Rooyen pops in the head. And Ollie, I think you're right to think that he could have a good week. Like, he's flashed in a recent starts, and they'll be like Søren Kjeldsen. He's shown some, you know, some low rounds that people may not have been aware of. I think he shot 63 in round 2 of the Scottish Open. He made the cut there. And then he's had a top finish last week and won on the PGA Tour, not won on it. So yeah, I think it's a sneaky pick there at Van Rooyen.
Yeah, I mean, triple figures, I was surprised in that theory of you've been playing in the PGA Tour coming over, but phenomenal from you, Tom Jacobs. I'm sure Eric Van Rooyen will be listening very impressed and maybe a bit alarmed. You know so much about him. Yes, just a reminder, if you enjoy a game but don't want to bet, then our fantasy game on the DP World Tour website is perfect for you. You select 6 players for the week and compete against your friends and others for bragging rights. Okay, just to finish off this week, we need to dive into the mailbag. We've got a couple of questions here that have been sent in. And it, of course, it's Ryder Cup themed, very much so. It's on everyone's mind. We're very excited. Tom Jacobs, and come to you first, which was sent in by Oliver Inwards. You've spoken on the American side of pairings, but he wants to know, what potential pairings do you see for Ludvig and Nikolai, and how does Ludvig not go at absolutely worst 4 wins out of 5? What do you think on those two?
Yeah, so I think the optimism is great from Ollie. He's great. He communicates with us on Twitter, and it's great to hear from him. I think he goes with Rory McIlroy. I really do. I think he could be paired with Rory McIlroy. I think they take him out because he's going to need an experienced player. So that brings it down to, I guess, Rory or Rose. And I guess the one thing they could look at is, does he give kind of Rose a bit of distance off the tee and help there? But I think he goes with Rory McIlroy. I did this last time. I wanted him to be paired with Victor Hovland, Rory, in Whistling Straits. And I think they did it for one match. And I could just see them going out. It could be a kind of Thomas Peters, Rory McIlroy kind of combo that we had. I think it was in 2016. I do think he likes taking on these rookies. And look, from a kind of betting and tipping perspective, in terms of how much I trust rookies at the Ryder Cup, I think the fact they don't have scar tissue is huge. Like, Åberg is getting into this team was an absolute bonus. He's done it by the fact that he's one of the best drivers of the golf ball in the world. That will pair up really nicely with him and Rory McIlroy. The concern, I guess, with him is that he hasn't seen Marco Simone, whereas Nikolaj Højgaard has and won there. I just don't, a little bit like what I said earlier with pairings, I don't see a natural fit for Højgaard and who he'd be paired with. I love that when we look back at this on Sunday and he's played really well for 2 or 3 matches with a partner that we didn't see coming, that would be great. But I think Åberg is the most obvious to pair with Rory. So do trust them. I think they're there on merit. All of those kind of rookies that we've got in, even Sepp Straka, I think there's a bit of doubts on. I think that's probably my take on it, is that it'd be Rory and Åberg, and I'm not sure about Nikolaj.
Yeah, I think that Rory and Åberg just looks perfect. And I think it's the romantic story of the team. Like, I think they could get together, and I wouldn't be surprised if they stick together for a lot of the week. I fancy either Nikolai, maybe to go with Nikolai or Straka, I think, will go with Rahm. Possibly Straka might get that nod. This is always an interesting conversation. But I really, like, Åberg is just so exciting. And, you know, could he play 5 times?
Yeah, I think he could. I think he's the one that, you know, in terms of playing, like, it's very hard to predict on the American side who's going to play 5 times. But look, I think you have to play Rory, Victor, Rahm, probably Tommy Fleetwood 5 times, Hatton potentially. So they're all going to kind of get the nod. I think actually Nikolai and Tommy Fleetwood could be a decent pairing. I think that Fleetwood brings a little bit of a calmness to the situation. Not the longest of drivers. So whilst he's a very good driver of the golf ball, I think that Nikolai gives that a little bit of added distance. And I don't mind seeing Hatton and Rahm play together. I think that could be pretty electric after Rahm's lost his obvious partner from the last Ryder Cup. So, I think in terms of people that potentially play 5 times, It would be those guys that, you know, the reliable Rory, Rahm. I think Rose could have actually a really important role to play. You know, he's six Ryder Cups now that he's played, and he's been a big important figure on most of them.
Yeah. I mean, you've mentioned there was another one that, Tom, about how much you sort of trust rookies, and they've got, you know, varying success rates. But Niall, how, just for you, and this is sort of a bit more ad libbing from me in my mailbag, how much do you think it is set by Luke and Zach already that they've already got their plans in place, and how much do you think they change that, you know, someone has a shocker on Friday? Do you think, you know, you stick with the process, or you realize they're totally out of form? Because it can change very quickly in the Ryder Cup. It's about momentum swing. So how flexible and versatile do you think the captains will be?
How flexible they will be is a question mark, but I think they have to be. Obviously, you know, the modern era of the Ryder Cup, they've had data collection guys walking the course with every game. And I think it would be foolish not to take that into account, especially when you go from four balls into foursomes, because it's a totally different game. You know, if you've got someone in four balls in the morning who's not driving the ball well, then it's a red flag for the foursomes in the afternoon, where you just have to change your mind. Now it's different, if it's a Rory McIlroy or John Rahm, because those guys are not going to be topped. But if you had Nicolai Højgaard out in the four balls and he started not driving the ball well, then, you know, he's not going to be included in the afternoon, whether it was in your plans or not. So it has to be and must be malleable and flexible across the week. You know, I think it's been a fair while since nobody's got a game before the singles, as far as I remember. Maybe back to Nick Faldo's reign at the Ryder Cup, I thought was the last time maybe someone didn't get a game. Did Andre Coulthard get a game before his singles? I don't think he did. Sean van der Velde was definitely one, as far as I remember, but I don't think there's been many recently. And I think it would be foolish, obviously, for captains not to give everybody a game. I think McIntyre might be the one on the European side who's maybe most vulnerable and might only get one game before the singles.
I think he's at the most risk. Like, I don't think he's a great foursomes partner. So I think that he would... So I think there's two players that would really stick out as four-ball players strictly. And I think that's Straka and McIntyre. And I think Straka would be thrown in a four-ball situation to go, look, we know you can make birdies in bunches, make them on the holes that X doesn't, and it might be Rahm, it might be, you know, Hatton or whatever. So yeah, I think in that respect, Ollie, in terms of like how flexible you need to be, I think one of the greatest things, I remember speaking to Ollie Wilson about his Ryder Cup experience, and I think he said at the time there wasn't that many vice captains about, and I think he was playing with Henrik Stenson and was really happy with how the two were playing, and he was just told on, I think, the 17th or 18th hole that he wasn't going to be going out in the afternoon. I seem to remember, if I'm misquoting him, I apologise, but like I seem to remember him saying like that if there was someone looking at that whole round, they would have probably advocated for him going back out in the afternoon. And I think that's the great thing you've got these days. You often see like how many vice captains do you need and what does it actually mean in the Ryder Cup? I think it's really important. Like those people going around, going back to Luke Donald to say, look, Sepp has driven the ball amazingly, that's what you've brought him on this team to do. Like we've only looked at him as a four-ball player so far, but could he offer something in the foursomes and things like that? I think those conversations are really important. So I think we've heard in recent kind of years when a team has struggled, they've gone, look, we're just going to stick to our process. We've laid out a plan and almost stubbornly stuck to it. And I don't think you can afford to do that. Not against the quality of competition that we're going to be playing this year. So Marco Simone can throw up different challenges, they can do different things, and I think ultimately we've got to react. And I think the biggest reaction will be if Rory gets paired with Åberg in the first session, is if he plays well, that's it for the week. And then we go from there. So look, I thought that before. I thought him and Hovland should have been a pairing and they weren't necessarily for the whole week. So plenty to figure out. But I think to your earlier point, Ollie, about would they have kind of had these pairings in their mind? Yes. Like, I think Thomas Bjorn would have been tasked with, who do you think Nikolai can play with? Because a year ago, everyone was going, well, the Højgaard twins will just play together. And that's not going to be the case because Rasmus isn't here. And I don't think that's necessarily always the best thing to do anyway. So I think it is very important to understand how they can be partnered. I think the only one they haven't really given too much thought about is Aberg, because I think it's so late that he's got in. So that's where I think they could come in with the Rory McIlroy thing.
Yeah, it's super exciting. I mean, we could talk about this for literally hours, but we won't just occur to the hour. And I think you're right that vice captains will definitely, as always, have a big part to play, as we've seen in past years with Robert Carlson getting lots of love. And Dodo, obviously, with his Italian expertise and the genius brain that he has, along with the Thomas Bjorn, who's basically the Danish whisperer, I'm sure played a big part in the Højgaard selection and had huge success in France. But that's pretty much it for this week. But before we say goodbye, we're just going to quickly recap all of the guys' picks on this week's events, which is, of course, the Horizon Irish Open. We'll start with Niall Lyon's picks for Ireland, and it was Adam Scott and Aaron Rye headlining for him. And then he went again with Joost Luiten, Julian Gerrier and Marcus Helikilde to complete his lineup of five, with Tom Jacobs picking Joost Luiten as well as a main pick, but Adrian Maronk alongside him, with Eddie Pepperell, Torbjørn Olesen and Søren Keldsen finalising his lineup of five players. Yes, a huge thank you to this week's guest, Niall and Tom, for all of their wonderful insights, not just on the Irish Open, but of course also the Ryder Cup. It is coming very quickly. You can find Niall on Twitter at BetGolfWorld. Niall, anything to say to the listeners and followers?
No, it's just been nice joining you. And if you see me down at the Irish Open or Wentworth next week, where I will be, come say hello.
Beautiful, he's doing both. And Tom Jacobs, 93 on Twitter. Tom, are you heading out to watch any live golf or just in front of the TV, feet up and hopefully cashing winners?
Yeah, I'd love to say I'll be feet up. I think I'll be quite busy those weekends. Unfortunately, not going to be either of them. But I think the overriding thing here, Ollie, to the listeners, is that no matter what we've kind of said from a positive or negative standpoint on the European players, is that I hope to be proven wrong on any negative standpoint I've had on selections, because that means that I win overall, because it means that Europeans have had a great Ryder Cup. So here's to Shane Lowry getting 5 points, and we move on to what could be a really thrilling Ryder Cup this year.
Absolutely right. It's going to be a cracker. And as Niall says, we will see you next time as we preview the BMW PGA Championship from Wentworth, which is always a special event with a great field. So until then, enjoy the golf, good luck with your picks, and see you next time on The Tips.